This is a web-only extra from Writer's Voice, part of our online series, What You Need to Know. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Is America hopelessly divided between those who voted for Donald Trump and those who voted for Joe Biden? Or can a weapon of mass connection be used to bridge the divide? That's a bet being made by a national economic and racial justice organization called People's Action. It's a coalition of grassroots groups operating in 30 different states on issues like climate justice, student debt, mass incarceration, health care, and housing, and in mobilizing voters to turn out for those issues. The weapon of mass connection People's Action uses, maybe a better word is tool, is something called deep canvassing. I spoke with Merdad Azamun, national political strategist with People's Action, about deep canvassing and more. Merdad Azamun, first of all, just tell us, give us a brief explanation of People's Action, where and why it started, and then we'll go on from there.
So we're a national economic and racial justice organization. We're the result of a merger of a bunch of progressive organizations from around the country, the oldest of which was about 40 years old. We've always been composed of people's organizations and groups that are working at the city level, at the regional level, at the statewide level. We're now in 30 different states. We've got over 40 different, people's organizations that are working on all sorts of issues, climate justice, student debt, mass incarceration, health care, and housing, homes guarantee.
So one thing that really struck me about People's Action, and I have to admit that I know about you guys because I did some texting in different states before the general election through your organization. And what attracted me to you is that you do something called deep canvassing. Tell us about deep canvassing and why it is effective as you claim that it is.
What's very clear is that nowadays in our politics, people are really striving for meaning. And part of the reason people can be turned off by politics is it can seem so cynical, so transactional. And obviously, as we've seen during the Trump era, it's really just full of brazen attacks and just a gross polarization. And if you're not with me, then that means automatically that you're against me. And if you haven't signed up for every single thing that I believe, then somehow you're a bad person. And it's very easy for people to get backed into the corners of political life that way. Deep canvassing is very different in that it's just a simple engagement tactic that we call, a colleague from San Francisco used this term, is that it's a weapon of mass connection. It is not transactional in nature, it's transformational. And it's both for the person who is doing the canvassing and the person being canvassed. And it relies on not a 2-minute drive-by conversation of, hey, are you going to vote for Trump or Biden? Are you going to vote for this or that candidate? All right, you're with us. Okay, you're against us. Goodbye. It actually forces both people to actually have a deeper conversation that is non-judgmental in nature and has both people actually share stories. So it is far more, it's warmer, it is more relational, and it actually touches on the points of tension, especially the person being canvassed may have, notions that they may have in their head or their story or their life story about whatever issue is being discussed, whether it's a candidate or a particular community issue that's happening. So we saw it as an incredibly effective and way more meaningful way to actually connect with voters in this election cycle. And we think the results of our political program really show that as well.
So what were those results?
So it's pretty stunning what we were able to do. We actually weren't even clear that we could reach these kinds of metrics, but we engaged in the end over 35,000 volunteers who made in the end about 2.2 million phone calls and had, between all the different states that we were calling into, about 280,000 deep canvas conversations all around the country. And we would ask the voter, and we were calling mostly conflicted voters in these cases, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you fall in voting for Trump or voting for Biden? And so number 1 was a strong Trump, number 10 was a strong Biden. And what we saw is that we had a so-called 49% movement rate, which meant that on that scale from 1 to 10, the conversations moved folks at least one notch towards Biden. So we're really happy that like half of the people that we were talking to, the conversations had some kind of effect. And it's not just that we were able to move half the people somewhat towards Biden. We had, of the people that we spoke with, 21%, we were actually, if they were either anti-Biden or completely undecided, we had a 21% persuasion rate, which meant that about 1 out of every 5 people that we talked to who was either against Biden or neutral on Biden, they were actually pro-Biden by the end of the conversation that we had with them.
So that's impressive. And it brings up a question that I think a lot of people are pondering these days. You were able to move about 20% of people who were neutral or anti-Biden. But how many people who are, let's say, in the 1 to 5 universe, that is, or 1 to 4 universe, closer to Trump, were you able to move? And is it possible to talk to people who are Trumpists?
This is a great question. It's one of the central questions, I would say, not just in our politics, but in our country, just in our society. Just because we feel the polarization day to day, minute by minute, obviously see it. You log into any kind of social media, it's impossible not to avoid that kind of polarization. I would say 2 things. I think, yes, it is absolutely possible that there were many people that we spoke with who were couldn't have been more pro-Trump. They were a number one, or they, you know, they would say, I'm a negative 20. If the scale is 1 to 10 and 1 is for Trump, then I'm a negative 20. Even those people that we spoke with, they really appreciated the conversation. And our volunteers would also self-identify and they would say, well, you know, personally, I'm like an 8 or a 10. I'm like completely pro-Biden. But the fact that we could actually have a conversation that ignored pundits, that didn't involve, are you a Fox News viewer or a MSNBC viewer? Do you listen in to Rush Limbaugh or do you tune into Democracy Now? They just really appreciated having a cooled off conversation in which 2 people could just share stories. And even if they came out saying, you know, we actually don't agree on this particular candidate, but we actually agree about all these other things. Folks really appreciated having that kind of non-judgmental conversation. The other thing I would say is that there are a lot of silver linings, obviously not just the fact that we defeated an authoritarian and demagogue at the polls, but when we look closely at a lot of the election results, progressive ideas can really break through. One example is Florida. You could look at it and say, oh my gosh, look at this. It's no longer a swing state. Can't believe Trump won in the way that he did with the kind of margins that he did in a state like that. At the same time, those same exact voters overwhelmingly approved a raise in the minimum wage. You look at healthcare, you look at immigration, large pluralities. We're talking 2/3 of the electorate are in favor of our position on those issues. And what we've seen over and over again, because of all sorts of different experiments and experiences with deep canvassing, well over a decade now, demonstrates that when we can slow down, have a non-judgmental conversation, and present our ideas, and not in a tricky way, not using a clever language, but just having a conversation about what kind of future could we imagine together, we can see that our ideas break through. And that, to me, is incredibly encouraging.
That is encouraging, but I guess what I'm so puzzled about is progressive ideas won in referendums, but people still down ballot voted overwhelmingly for Republicans, even if the state went for Biden, Republicans won down ballot. How do you figure this out? And what do Democrats need to do to really be able to, in the best sense of the term, take advantage of the fact that support for progressive ideas is growing?
So there was, it's very clear. This was, it's been talked about many times that this was a election of historic turnout, not just on the Democratic side, but also on the Republican side. And I think there was a surge down ballot. You're right. And in a lot of state house races, in a lot of, obviously, you know, surprisingly, U.S. House races, there was a surge on the other side. Honestly, a lot of my answer is a little bit case by case. I think the overall point about Trump's effect down ballot, I think, is very important. And obviously, I think some of the take home is that so many of the polls are garbage and based on some faulty assumptions. And I think we have to take them not as forecasting, but just as a very, very general barometer. And I think as progressives, I think we really have to contend with the kind of force that Trump had down ballot. And I also think that we really do need to look closely at a lot of the candidates and the campaigns that the Democrats ran. And it's very unfortunate. I can say, as I've been organizing for about 20 years, and I've seen over and over again, the Democratic Party invests and throws money at the most foolish things. They are very centered on candidates and not so much centered on infrastructure. The thing that was very troubling from this last election cycle is that the right in many ways has taken some of the best parts of our playbook, which is building a lot of infrastructure, going door to door, which of course we could not do in this cycle for, you know, public safety and public health reasons, and really having that personal touch with voters. And I think the Democratic Party invests a ton in, again, candidates and particularly in TV ads and things like mail, which don't really do that much. And I think kind of getting back to basics, investing in infrastructure and going to voters who may have counted themselves out of the process because it really does look so gross when you look at it from far away, I think that's going to be a lot of the secrets to success in the future.
And do you think that that's a lesson that the Democrats have taken? Because, you know, it was so evident that this time many organizations like People's Action, like the Sunrise Movement, like Stacey Abrams' efforts in Georgia, really did focus on that voter infrastructure and possibly helped to deliver the election to Biden.
Yes, the twin states to really look at, and you mentioned one of them is Georgia, and particularly Stacey Abrams, not just a flash of the pan 3-month campaign that she threw together. This is a 10-year effort, and there's a parallel story to be told in Arizona around Latino voters, Black voters, young voters, that again was a decade-long struggle that actually came out of the passage of an anti-immigrant bill back in 2010, one of the worst anti-immigrant bills in the country. And it was organizers basically putting their heads together. You know, it wasn't just one person, one organization, but saying, we've got a long battle to fight here. And the thought that in deep red Georgia, the thought that in deep red Arizona, this was the birthplace of so many hardcore conservatives. A lot of listeners may remember Barry Goldwater. Arizona was his stomping ground. That's where he proved a lot of his ideas, or tried to prove a lot of his ideas, and then nationalized them. The fact that people who were directly affected by a lot of the worst policies that we're fighting against, people of color, young voters, women, could be the vanguard, could be at the forefront of then breaking through and turning both of those states blue. You know, if we were a year ago, 4 years ago, election night 2016, and we could have told listeners, listen, both of these states are going to be blue in 4 years, we would have said, you're joking. But we did it. Folks did it. Organizers did it.
And now Georgia, which is going to be absolutely critical to being able to do anything to address the overwhelming crises like the pandemic, like the climate crisis, like the looming economic crisis, the rent crisis, the student debt crisis, and the immigration crisis, and all the way down the line. It's going to be critical to gain those two seats in the Senate. How do you gauge our chances, and what is People's Action doing to move the needle on that race?
So like I said, there are organizations that have been fighting the excellent, excellent fight in Georgia for years. If listeners are curious, a couple of them are Fair Fight Georgia and New Georgia Project. And these are just amazing Black-led organizations, and many also Asian American organizations, Latinx organizations that have been, again, on the ground for well over a decade and fighting some of the most egregious progressive policies and politicians there. So folks really need to follow the leadership of the organizers there. And I think we have very good chances. It's really going to come down to three things, which are turnout, turnout, and turnout. Both sides of the political spectrum are very animated. Everyone around the country is looking to the single state and those two seats as the ways to break through on their agenda. And I think we have a very good chance, partly because of, again, what Stacey Abrams and her allies were able to do in this last, just 3 weeks ago. And we are also mobilizing. And we're, again, working closely with organizations in the state. And just like we did the 280,000 phone calls, deep canvas phone calls that we did in this election cycle, we'll be doing those in Georgia as well, and having deep canvas conversations with voters in the state. And again, trying to use story sharing, non-judgmental conversations to try and break through. And I feel very optimistic. Our folks are animated, excited about both candidates and the kind of breakthrough that will happen nationally. If folks are interested in taking part, I can just give a short URL. People can just aim their browser at ppls.ac/phones. And I'll just repeat it. It's ppls.ac/phones. And then you should be able to sign up for a deep canvas phone banking shift.
Mayor Dodd Osmond, it's just been a pleasure to talk with you, and inspiring as well. Thank you.
Thanks for everything you do.
Mayor Dodd Osmond is national strategist with People's Action. This has been a web-only extra from Writer's Voice, part of our online series, What You Need to Know. I'm Francesca Rhiannon.